You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Exxon, Pfizer and Raytheon were booted off the Dow in the biggest reshuffle in 7 years recently. They were replaced by Salesforce, Amgen and Honeywell. So it's out with oil and in with the cloud, it seems. And the COVID-19 pandemic has pushed cloud computing to the front of decision makers' minds. That's according to the new Cloud in Africa 2020 report. It was released recently by market research leaders Worldwide Works in partnership with F5, Dell Technologies, DigiCloud Africa and Intel. And the study is the most comprehensive overview of existing and future cloud trends across the African continent yet. We're joined now by Arthur Goldstuck, MD of Worldwide Works, Samir Sahil, Regional Cloud Sales Manager, Middle East, Turkey and Africa for F5, and Dell Technologies Director for Systems Engineering, Greg MacDonald. Arthur, tell me a little bit more about the research before we get started, because this is the third cloud study that you've conducted over the last 7 or 8 years, I believe.
Thank you, Michael. Yes, we first did a study across Africa's three key markets, South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria, back in 2013 to get a sense of cloud uptake back then. And at that stage, 50% of enterprises across Africa were using the cloud. We then repeated the study 5 years later in 2018 and discovered that by then everyone was using the cloud, certainly in the corporate environment and amongst bigger organizations, but not necessarily all in with regard to everything in the cloud, but using one or other aspect of the cloud. And at that stage, it was still a question of migrating to the cloud, discovering it, experimenting with it, and using it mainly for data backup and for storage. 2 years later, 2020, when we repeated the study now across 8 African markets, we discovered that the environment had evolved where it was no longer about discovering the cloud or about using it for its very basic, you could almost say beginner use of data storage or backup, but now it was about business strategy and efficiency.
Yeah, and building apps and using those kinds of things like online accounting software and that kind of thing. Greg, it's interesting that security breaches represent the biggest concern in the cloud, according to the study. Is this warranted, considering that most data breaches we're seeing, I'm looking at the Experian data breach, are based on human error. It seems like we're hacking humans more than we're hacking systems. So is this fear of security around the cloud warranted?
I think so there, Richard. I think that the key there is to drive security and an end-to-end strategy. It's very important that you not only protect the castle, but you protect the individuals in the castle at the same time. And just like the work from home program has been ongoing for much of South Africans, given the pandemic, the end user actually becomes one of the biggest issues from a security management framework point of view. And protecting the endpoint is one of the areas that our business certainly focuses on, just as much as we do with data center security solutions by way of right up into the cloud. And you really need a holistic security message from front to back, from end to end, including the social media sort of challenges, the social engineering sort of challenges that you spoke about, and the stuff that happened with Experian. Very difficult to protect, but you've got to think about it holistically and collectively from end to end.
And Samir, from your vantage point, how has that threat landscape changed since the coronavirus crisis started? What type of threats are we seeing on the increase?
I think we see a lot of automated, basically, threats, and the attacks on the application has increased. We've seen, I think, within the corona, more than 300% increase in terms of attacks on identity and and applications. I can take an example with one of the customers here in the region, basically providing delivery food. So one of the attacks was basically playing on the coupons and discount scheme that the provider was having, and would basically get a lot of orders. And once the company would realize it was fraudulent, it's too late. So the attacks are getting more complicated and or complex and automated, and the cost is going down. That gives a lot of challenges for companies basically to undertake them. And if you add this to the pressure of customer experience and expectations, so now you really have to be super efficient in developing application with a very good customer experience, on the same time have a very high level of security to ensure service to your customers.
Greg, I want to just come back on this issue of security to talk about how organizations are responding here. And we're mentioning before we started this how it's almost important now to have a cyber fire drill to test your staff's readiness. If the human element, if we're hacking people, if there's social engineering in these schemes, we really need to be testing our readiness. How are companies responding?
I think it is a challenge because the typical approach for many organizations is to look at the tool sets that are available from all the vendors across the industry and go with the best of breed approach by saying, if I bought the best of breed firewall or identity and access management systems and I collected them together, I would technically have the best of breed security systems. One of the factors that's often left out is that fire drill stuff that you spoke about there. How do you potentially put systems in place that we can start to educate our employees on the perils and dangers of doing business and operating in the internet sort of world we operate in today? I know with our sort of company, we do fire drills quite regularly. I've been caught out once or twice in those fire drills myself. We were discussing before the call about having the ability to look at phishing as a great example and how to educate employees on the perils of phishing. Now, we've seen a lot of very high-quality phishing emails come through the system today, and even the banking industry has been under immense attack from a phishing point of view. You often would receive an email from a bank that looks like your bank statement, and it says, click here to put your PIN in and get your bank account number and see your bank balance. And in fact, what you're doing is you're filling in on somebody else's server that then capture your details, and then they can then go and access your particular account. And I think phishing is one of those kind of things that if your guard is not high, you can be easily tricked by phishing and spoofing kind of emails. And those are the fire drills that we're talking about previously. How do we educate employees and staff, especially in this COVID-19 lockdown world where we're operating at home, to not let your guard down even when you're in your own home premises and look out for the irregular emails, the funny email addresses, and the stuff that looks too good to be true. Those are often the reasons and easiest ways for hackers to get access to networks today.
Arthur, there's so much more in the report. We could spend the whole 30 minutes just talking about security, but I want to move on now to what you found when it came down to the most important technology trends for future strategy in the cloud. If users are a lot more comfortable with the cloud, it's not just a place to store your data, but you can actually leverage the cloud as a service to start developing applications. What are the most important trends that the companies you surveyed across the region are viewing at the moment?
Michael, there's a lot of talk about the fourth industrial revolution changing the future of Africa. So that was one of the key elements that we explored in the survey. And we asked companies which non-cloud trends they expect to have the most strategic importance over the next 3 years. And sure enough, the technologies underlying the fourth industrial revolution came out incredibly strongly. But there were three in particular that stood out above all the rest. The one was artificial intelligence, with 92% of respondents saying that that would have strategic importance over the next 3 years. That's a very significant one, because in our studies on the fourth industrial revolution over the last 3 years, we found that AI was expected to be embraced by more organizations than any other new technology. But a year later, that was back in 2018, a year later, we found that in fact there'd been a massive fall off in intended use because of the high cost of embracing AI, of training people and of acquiring the skills for AI. But what we'll see in the coming years is that there'll be an intensification of training and of qualification in the AI space, and suddenly there'll be a massive availability of those skills, and that will transform the use of technologies relating to AI. And one of the main ones is in fact big data. So that also came up, 89%, very close to the level of AI. You could say 9 out of 10 respondents said that big data would be one of the key trends, and that goes hand in hand with AI, because without AI you can't really leverage big data. You can't analyze the massive amounts of information coming through your system effectively. And then alongside those was also at 89%, the Internet of Things, which we know best in South Africa for its impact on the vehicle tracking industry. But that's going to spread out across all sectors and all applications. So those are the the big three, you could say. We refer to it as the magic triangle of technology.
And Samir, on that, in terms of infrastructure, do we have sufficient infrastructural architecture in place in terms of 5G to carry the quantums of data that are going to enable the likes of AI and big data to leverage this to develop business insights, or are we still waiting for that to happen in the region?
I think the access to technology have been accelerated with the upcoming of data centers in the region, especially in South Africa. If you look at basically the AWS data center in Cape Town and the Azure one, that's definitely accelerated the appetite for developers to use those new services and provide the next generation of services to customers by developing applications. But it's not only access of technology, it's also basically the practice. If you look at technology from one hand and regulation that basically give more confidence, we know now how to get our data, where to store it, we have more clear visibility. That gives you basically a lot of practice. So your developers are practicing more and trying to adopt new concepts. I can take the example of DevOps and Agility as an example, where developers would work together to provide the next generation software and applications and leverage those basically new services like AI and machine learning. Again, I can take an example of with the context of COVID, one of the government entities in the continent was developing an application that's a container-based. So this is basically one of the new way of developing applications that are very responsive, like the Uber application and the Netflix. So the application was developed in different public cloud, like Google Cloud and Azure, and was serving customers to track and communicate in a better way to the community how to cope with the COVID. So I can say it's become a reality in our continent.
And a very interesting report, the Cloud in Africa report produced by Worldwide Works with its partners Dell and F5 and DigiCloud as well. Greg, we're just talking about apps, and Samir was saying that we're certainly seeing the big data centers as well spurring on the development and the DevOps side of things. What sort of apps are we seeing that are hugely popular now that businesses are far more comfortable with the cloud?
I think, you know, one of the big ones is certainly Microsoft Office 365. We've seen a huge uptake in that as a sort of cloud collaboration and productivity tool set. Our own organization has recently adopted that as a common one. So those are the big ticket items that we see pretty popular, right down to the more custom generated sort of stuff, which are apps that are locally built here in South Africa for mobile devices, whether it be your iPhone or your Android sort of handsets, for example. And I think today's youth, you know, whether they be that Gen Z or millennial person, is very comfortable engaging with mobile devices. It's quite au fait with picking up apps off the App Store, for example, downloading stuff that they've never seen before, and moving around the apps with the functionality. And I think today's modern apps need to be quite focused around young people, how they can get access to service, ability to generate self-service themselves. And I think all organizations, whether you're small to medium to large, whether you're in the public sector or the banking sector, need to think about the simplicity of the apps that are generated. Those apps need to be built on modern software practices that are built across cloud-native platforms. And they also need to integrate data into the application development process so we can get version one of our app out really quickly, followed by 1.1, 1.2, and get the cycle of innovation going. And the speed of innovation will hold people's attention to particular apps. And we think that Dell Technologies company speaks about the application development lifecycle just as much as we do selling desktops and notebooks.
Great.
I think that's a good value proposition.
On that point, there's so much jargon in the IT industry that you guys just talk with a different language sometimes. And just the viewer, you say cloud-native platforms. What do you mean when you say designing for cloud-native platforms?
So if you think about applications that were developed many years ago, we followed this what we call waterfall model, which was very large iteration and it took a very long time to produce. And you followed particular legacy architectures from an infrastructure point of view to support those software design cycles. Today, we follow something called an agile development cycle, which is, and it's built on what we call containers. And these containers run on what we call cloud native systems. And a container is a very small, lightweight service, and it's designed to run lots of these services in parallel. And the analogy I can think about is think about the old waterfall model being a huge freight trainer, you know, two engines in the front with lots of carriages holding lots of coal or goods in the back. Today's container is a fleet of vehicles that are designed to go across South Africa and deliver goods. It's a good analogy to sort of think about.
Absolutely.
And when you think about these containers and services, it's very important that you're able to build containers quick, start them up quickly, cycle them very quickly, and take them down. It also gives you the ability to make small and minute changes in software, and those changes are as a result of demand that's coming from the consumer side of things, which means that your software development cycle is very agile, it's very quick, and very fast to produce something that somebody needs in the market. And this way, you give businesses the ability to respond to digital changes, market changes in the industry, and things like the pandemic, and how we can optimize and bring services to support people who may be working at home or be facing under different situations. They're in a lockdown or other, perhaps. Does that make sense, what we're saying?
It reminds me exactly. It certainly does, of what the banks of old have had to grapple with in terms of legacy spaghetti IT systems and responding in an agile manner to a consumer that is used to a new product or service from a fintech, and it takes the bank a lot longer to turn that tanker around. That is changing, though, as we see a shift to this cloud-native ecosystem. Arthur, a lot of this points to the evolving role of cloud for real-time productivity opposed to its traditional image as a backup storage system. How are companies viewing this as a game changer in the operating environment? How do you see this driving innovation, spurring on competition, and really accelerating this move into the fourth industrial revolution across the continent?
A critical aspect of that is the ability of organizations to differentiate between those applications that are firstly mission critical or business critical, and then those that will benefit the most from being in the cloud. So in other words, it's not the cloud for its own sake, but rather which applications make sense in the cloud and which make sense on the ground. And a great example of that from a business operations point of view is that when we ask companies which are your most critical applications, you find that finance and accounting come out at the very top. But when we ask them which applications are currently in the cloud, then we find accounting at the top, but finance moves significantly down that stack. And that's because the accounting function as such functions exceptionally well in the cloud. It's a great example of enhancing business efficiency. But the overall finance function often has to be managed on premise and within the organization rather than across the public cloud. So it's not a case of one size fits all, or just because accounting is part of finance that all finance is in the cloud. It's very much cherry picking what works best in the cloud and what works best for the organization. In that way, you then are driving business strategy in the cloud rather than pursuing the cloud for its own sake.
And Samir, it also speaks to the need then of ensuring that we have 100% uptime here as far as possible, because if you've got sort of enterprise level mission critical apps like finance and accounting in the cloud, you as a business can't afford any kind of downtime. How much is this becoming a major concern for businesses that are surveyed?
I think service availability is especially with the context of COVID, has become one of the very, very top, I would say, priorities for IT leaders, because it has a direct impact on customer experience. Now, everything that you do is through a digital channel. You educate your children, you communicate, you work, and order food and entertain through a digital channel. We don't have basically the customer in front of you to be able to react on his level of satisfaction. And I can tell you that the high expectation of customers are merciless. We, on average, a customer would churn after a bad experience with a service. So, and availability is one of the, and delays is one of the key elements that basically would reduce this this customer experience. So having applications that are customer facing running on the cloud definitely help in increasing availability, as you're going to basically have your application running in different environments that are having high availability level of service. So that's also accelerated the adoption of cloud in during this time.
And how is, Greg, how is spend tracking? I mean, I'm sure companies are spending quite a lot of money investing in these new technologies. How is that tracking from the last sort of surveys that you've done? And are companies at least seeing return on that kind of investment? Because I think IT has a legacy issue that it's got to deal with, that there's always a new service or shiny bell or whistle or product that is then stacked onto another one that doesn't quite deliver what many who sell the products say it's going to do on the can. How is this playing itself out in the cloud?
We see a lot of customers are still burdened by a lot of technical debt of purchases and decisions that have made over the past sort of 20, 30 years, and hanging on to a fair amount of those sort of platforms today. And those platforms cost the money to sort of look after and maintain. And the ability to move to modern platforms certainly frees up the legacy cost and technical debt that I spoke about. But if you look at the data, certainly internally within our company, we see that cloud spend on services, infrastructure, and related software around the cloud is up a third this year in compared to last year, typically a third. And it's really got to do with, you know, there's nothing like a pandemic to accelerate one's digital transformation sort of business, especially as the market changes and as our purchasing cycles change because we're now working from home. And if you had an online store presence, you may be spending more money on boosting that today versus the typical bricks and mortar type of operations, given that we're now shopping from our mobile phones and on our PCs in our bedrooms, for example. So we're certainly seeing it. And as that, there's three kind of key areas that we're seeing the spend increase on. One, it's on that software development cycle and how to build modern apps. Two, it's on that ability to deliver those apps quickly, consistently around the world. And then the third area is the protection against cyber threats, and we covered that a little bit earlier. Those are the three key spending criteria that we're certainly seeing this year as a big uptake compared to last year.
And to your earlier point, I hope we're seeing an uptick in education to go along with that spend on the security side as well, because you can think you've bought the best firewalls and the best software. Really, that doesn't necessarily equate to the best security outcome. Arthur, we also see quite a high increase in spend for Zimbabwe, which has much to do, I guess, with its location to us here in South Africa, because we've got the fiber connectivity and they've got access being our neighbor. Do you see this as a theme or a feature of the cloud in Africa, that we have this sort of hub and spoke type progression of the advance of cloud through Africa?
Very much so. Last year, for example, we saw South Africa having the highest level of increase in spending on cloud computing amongst organizations because of the arrival of the major data centers in this country, AWS and Azure data centers in particular, being laid down in Johannesburg and Cape Town. And that resulted in massive increase in availability of cloud services and therefore a massive increase in spend. Now what we're seeing is countries like Zimbabwe and Botswana, neighboring South Africa, taking advantage of their proximity to this market and the rollout of fiber connectivity across the region. So those countries are now seeing the highest level of increase in spend on cloud as a result. And we're going to see that for a while. Wherever the data centers are laid down will be, as you say, the hub and spoke kind of catalyst for increased spending on cloud in neighboring countries. And that will spread out from South Africa, from Kenya, and from Nigeria.
And almost to reverse engineer Greg's earlier example of the freight train, where you see train tracks laid down, economic activity seems to spring up around them. The very same thing with data centers as well. Fascinating chatting to you guys. Thank you very much for the time. Arthur Goldstuck, MD of Worldwide Works, Samir Sahil, Regional Cloud Sales Manager, Middle East, Turkey and Africa for F5, and Dell Technologies Director for Systems Engineering, Greg MacDonald, talking about COVID and the cloud. It's clear that COVID-19 has brought cloud to the fore across Africa.